Driving around the upstate of South Carolina, I continue to see promotion of some local event called the Roughest and Toughest Brawl. You have to hear about this and what we can learn from it on this week's Corey Truax Show. The intro I really wanted to give you will follow, but I only have a 15-second intro, and this was too long to say. Here's what I wanted to say. What does the roughest and toughest brawl, children licking peanut butter off of each other's feet, and OnlyFans all have in common on this week's Corey Truax Show? That's what I want to bring together for you into one thread. Let me add one more thread to this weave that I am spinning. I'm also on a Carl Truman kick. I think Carl Truman is the most important public Christian intellectual of the last, call it 50 or 60 years. And the way that he echoes for me a lot of some C.S. Lewis thinking. There's some C.S. Lewis theology that is weak, we can just say wrong, that I would urge you against. But C.S. Lewis was an interesting thinker, a brother in Christ, someone we will spend eternity with, and had some interesting thoughts about a very interesting time in history. I mean, he lived through World War I, World War II. So all of those things together. I'm driving around the upstate. I see this. They're usually like yard signs for something called the Roughest and Toughest Brawl. I looked it up. I want to tell you about it. I saw a video of children in Oklahoma for a fundraiser licking peanut butter off of each other's toes. And then generally some of the discourse around OnlyFans. All of it ties together with something Carl Truman and C.S. Lewis will bring together for us, specifically with an old book called The Abolition of Man, an absolute classic that I highly recommend, so much so that I went ahead on YouTube today and just listened to a synopsis to make sure I remembered The Abolition of Man properly, because I probably read it when I was 20 or 21, which for me is coming up on almost, you know, it's almost 20 years ago now, but I do think I kept it. So we'll do all that on this week's Corey Truax Show. Once it's all finished, if you want to respond to me, send me stories or thoughts or responses, ideas, you can do so on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Threads. Look for my weird name, Corey Truax. You'll find me there. You can also get me at CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com. CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com. Let's get to it. So first, the roughest and toughest brawl. This is apparently a touring company that's going to several locations around the upstate of South Carolina. And when they're finished with us, they'll move on and go somewhere else. They're going up to North Carolina after this, I saw, in the High Point, Greensboro area. And here is what it is, gentlemen. If you just want to fight somebody, you put on some headgear and something short of boxing gloves. I would not call these boxing gloves. It's a little bit less than that. And you want to, for, it looks like, 3 rounds of 1 minute each, hit each other. You can't kick and you can't wrestle. It can't go to the ground. You can't. It's like UFC. Can't fight to the ground, but you just want to try to punch each other strategically for a minute, you random dude, you can do that. You can now sign up, and then people can pay money to go see men, untrained men, mostly I would imagine, punch each other. That's what they want to do out at the Old Mill in Pickens, which is an incredible venue, by the way, out here in Pickens County. They do a flea market out there. It's a cool old mill, and they're probably going to put a ring in there and lots of chairs around it and I'll leave some commentary out. It just says some men. Men will punch each other for your entertainment. And they'll move on the next week. I think the Traveler's Rest. And they'll move on the next week, North Carolina. So that's what they're going to do. I'm live here as I'm recording, reading from their website. Here is what you have to do before you fight. Arrive by 5 for your weigh-in with your paperwork, which is looks to me just to be a waiver, like saying, if I get hurt doing this, I won't sue anybody. And you have to have your breathalyzer. Let's make sure you're not drunk before you get in the ring. And then that's basically it. They give you headgear, 16-ounce boxing gloves. I guess that is about the normal boxing glove. It's a little bit less. I took a little story. I took a couple of boxing classes for a couple of weeks. Probably, this is over 10 years ago. I learned a little bit so I could do a better job of defending myself if ever I needed to. But man, I got wrung by a dude, and I don't ever want to get punched again. It's a terrible feeling getting properly punched. All right, so that's one thing. Men are going to get together for entertainment and fight each other. Next, I saw in the social media rounds out in Oklahoma for a fundraiser, some children were encouraged to lick peanut butter off of the toes of other children, to the delight and the uproarious laughter of other children, and oddly, adults. So it was obviously some adult's idea to have children lick peanut butter off of each other's toes. Now, I should also stop here and give due criticism to the fact that whoever suggested this, whatever adult suggested this, probably goes to some big evangelical megachurch, because that's the kind of stuff they do in their youth groups, is gross-out games. So they had children doing that. And then finally, I brought up OnlyFans quite a few times on the show, digital prostitution, and just now seeing, because I watch a lot of true crime with my wife, I've actually gotten into it. I don't watch it just because I like her anymore. I watch it because it's interesting. True crime is an interesting phenomenon. But the amount of women who just have these accounts, and when they need money, they decide they're just going to put out, they will dangle pictures of themselves out there to men who have sought them out on these sites, and they might not make a consistent lifestyle out of it, but when they're in a bind, they'll go sell pictures of themselves. So, all of those. Men are going to get together and punch each other for fun and for entertainment. Children are licking peanut butter off each other's toes. Women are selling their bodies for money. And as I consider those facts, and I've been on a Carl Truman kick, he reminded me of the old C.S. Lewis book, The Abolition of Man. Here was his premise, and what I want to show you is it was prophetic in a way, but even more than he thought. His premise was this: technology really is replacing the functions of humans. And so we're becoming less human. We were made to function. We were made to do things, and we are being replaced. We were made to make things, and he grew up during, that would have been right after the Second Industrial Revolution, and so really coming into modernity. Men are being replaced in their jobs by machines. He would have been at the cusp of automobiles becoming more prominent there in Britain. And so the men who raised horses and built carriages and changed the wheels on those carriages, and their job was to get humans from point A to point B, they're just being replaced by these machines. And the people, and often the women, but a lot of the men who worked the looms and made our clothes, they're just going to be replaced. The function of the human is being replaced. He had a very profound piece of writing, I think it was in The Abolition of Man, about his first experience on a long train ride. Because he grew up in a time where it was still fairly normal. If you're going on a long trip, you either ride in a carriage where you have a job, even as a child, there's something you're doing to look after this precarious journey. Maybe you're responsible for your younger siblings, or you're responsible for making sure the horses have what they need. Or you had to take yourself, your physical body, your feet had to take you somewhere. And this very odd experience, for the first time, humans had this experience where they're put onto a vehicle and they're just told, sit there. We'll take you where you're going. In a very real way, not saying not for the better, but in a very real way, humanity was being replaced by technology. And so he was arguing the function, because humanity is losing its function to technology. We are losing what it is to be a human, what God made us for. He actually, I remember an argument later in his life. He thought that the brutality of World War II, both the concentration camps from Germany, the trench warfare of World War I, which was just so brutal how men killed each other, and I think he would argue the use of the atomic bomb at the end of World War II, that our ability to be that violent towards one another is in part because we started dehumanizing through technological advancement and through two things I'll give you in a minute. We stopped seeing humans as humans, and so it was easier. A man was being abolished, and so it was easier to kill en masse. He argued these two concepts in Abolition of Man. I'm going to show you that it's gotten worse. That we lost enchantment, and then we lost, I believe he called it, solidity. Enchantment being the idea that this very functional, cool world, that a lot of it we just didn't know how it worked. that the purification of this water that we're drinking from the tap, this is one of his examples. We kind of understand the water cycle. We know that water comes down from the high rivers and that we can use this water. But there's still something mystical about how the Lord does that through the planet's own systems. And it's just not mystical anymore. I think the way he said it was when old Ned works down at the water treatment facility and you just know Ned. And Ned's not special. Ned just makes the water drinkable and it goes through the pipes and you turn it on and now it's just water. What? No big deal. We lost enchantment as technology made our lives where you can explain everything. And the sciences did that. Which is, again, there's good, a lot of good in that. We're called to take dominion. I'm glad the science has figured out a lot of the world. But it does something to humanity, and it's enchantment where we can explain everything. And then he talked about losing solidity. That the nature of this post-technical world, this post-high technology and the word I'm looking for, industrial revolution world, is liquid. We don't have solidity because the technology changes so fast. Someone builds a machine to reinstall tires on a car or a tool to do that, but it's not a few years later that someone says, you don't need those tools anymore. We actually have a machine to do it for you where you don't need to use the tools. You need to use the machine that does the whole thing. And eventually someone builds the machine that does it all, but so you can't really predict anything. You don't know what the next couple years is going to look like. So him saying those things, losing solidity, that predictability of your role in the world and what you do in it, and the disenchantment that we can explain everything, we're just abolishing humanity and what God meant us to be in all of our functions. And I would argue those things have only increased, and part of that example, we'll come to at the end, is that ultimately ends with men beating each other for fun, women selling their bodies, and children licking toes. I'll get there, I promise. Just think about how much our meaning is bound up in our function, our role to one another. You know, we are made to work. It's in that Genesis mandate. And our work just gets more and more disembodied. We went through an entire period of human history in 2020 where we were told a lot of our work was non-essential. I even think about my job. I like that I go into the office to do it, but now I think more and more I really don't have to. My job is a lot of ones and zeros. It's not very human-focused anymore. And then the way that we broke families, the function of what it means to be a father to a child, a mother to a child, to be a sibling to one another, to be a good neighbor to one another. I've talked about the breaking down of neighborhoods. We've continued to abolish man. We weren't made for this kind of atomization and individuality. We were made to serve functions for one another. But either technology or the disintegration of the family, we've lost our function, so we don't really know what it means to be human. Men will wonder what their purpose is if they lose the ability to provide and protect. As governments and programs come along and say to men, you are no longer necessary. These programs will provide and protect for everybody, so you're not needed anymore. As other social, let's call them movements, as other social movements said to women, the most important thing you can be is a man. You just got to go do what men do. When you do what men do, then you'll really be a woman. That tended to be the argument of not all the feminisms, but a lot of feminism. The argument was when you're a good man, then that's really what it means to be a woman. And then as that happens and women hand off some of their roles and even instincts God gave them regarding raising their children, things like that, they start to hand those off. Both genders in this world start to wonder, so why am I necessary? Men wondering, if I'm not here to protect and provide, women, if I'm not here to provide and nurture a family, what am I doing? Am I necessary in this world? That has done away with our enchantment in some ways with the world. I think what C.S. Lewis would argue there, our just divine, I don't want to say divine nature. I don't mean that. Let me take that back. I don't mean that we have a divine nature, but our being made in the image of God, that God working out God roles through us because he's good in fatherhood and motherhood and those things. That, in that way, we lost our enchantment. And then I just think about all the ways that we continue to lose our solidity, how liquid the world is, just how fast education changes. Listen to a Nate Bargatze comedy special a while back, and it was very funny how he explained trying to do math with this kid. That he could do the math problem for her, like, fifth grade math problem in his head in a moment. And, you know, he makes jokes all the time. If you don't listen to Nate Bargatze, he's very funny, great, clean comedy. But to do what he could do in his head in a moment, their system, because it was based on tens, it's Common Core math, it needed to take like 10 minutes to basically do a subtraction problem. Just the method of education changes so fast, and then we start including internet stuff. Think about all the ways things change. The way that my parents would have found a spouse locally started to change with video dating and then internet dating. But then internet dating even took it to another level where it was no longer, I am now getting onto a website to find a spouse, but we moved even further to hookup sites. We've changed, and we're not even sure where that's, you know, where's it going to go next? Does anyone think that we've hit the bottom of the how men and women meet each other apparatus technologically? We can't even count on what it's going to look like 10 years from now for our kids. How finding a job changed, not coming up in the family business or even looking around your neighborhood at those industries. For that matter, the probably unhealthy but lionized story inside American literature where you leave home, go to the big city and find your living. Now we expect people to change industries, not jobs, industries, 6 and 7 times in their life. There's no enchantment to life because we've lost our function. There's no solidity to life because things are going to change so fast. And in that way, C.S. Lewis argues there's this abolition of man. What are we? And why are we here? What are we trying to do? I think we're in part so miserable in this world because we are abolishing what it means to just be a human. What God tended to gave us in the garden. And now here's where my recent reading of, of Carl Truman comes in. He talked, so C.S. Lewis talks about losing function and solidity, or enchantment and solidity. Truman, whether he means to or not, is, I think, adding a new chapter. That in our abolition of man, the erasure of what it means to be human, it's now coming after the human body directly. Call it a secular, I think that's a good word for it, if you want to get very incendiary, demonic, but a ungodly worldview that denigrates the human body itself. Now, most of what I'm about to take is directly from listening. So up until now, I'm trying to give you what C.S. Lewis gave you in my best recounting of it. Now, here's Carl Truman. He argues that this process of the abolition of humanity and the body comes in two categories lately, and that is the categories of sex and death. These are the that which pertain to life creation and life ending. He would argue that a lot of the law, Exodus, Leviticus, where you get the law, Deuteronomy, a lot of God's law has to do with secretions and, let's call it, ceremonies around sexuality and the omissions of sexuality, and then what happens at death. There's a lot of law around where that which pertains to the creation of life and that which pertains to the ending of life. That instinct, maybe call that the law of God written on humanity, has resulted in even non-Christian cultures throughout history having a lot of fanfare and adulation around birth, around weddings, in part because weddings were, by nature, were to lead to life. These two coming together, this man and woman coming together, will lead to life being created. And so even in non-Christian cultures around the world, we celebrate those, and then we celebrate births. In very Christian cultures, then we'll do baby baptisms that were, at least those that were Lutheran and very Presbyterian and very Catholic, because we are lionizing that which pertains to life creation. And then, we don't do this anymore, But we consecrate ground around holy places, churches, where we do funerals. That used to be how we would want to do it. You build a church, you better leave a lot of space, because we are in the business here of, I hate to say business, and let me retract that word. We are about the ministry, also not a word I like in this case, of demonstrating to the world that we commit our bodies to consecrated ground around holy places, because the things that happen around life creation and life ending are in some way sacred. And so that's what we used to do. But now in this abolition of man, this secular and damaging philosophy is now saying, the creation of humans, the ending of humans, it's not important because your body's not important. I would argue that this is now back to me and not Carl Truman. Can't you see how we've dehumanized the body through sex? Forget about OnlyFans for a minute. I'm getting there. But just pornography itself. That which should be mysterious for a man and a woman, it becomes a scrollable product like you're looking for curtains on Amazon. I like to imagine the men and women of a generation that didn't have what we had. You know, a man 100 years ago, so go to 1923, it is likely he could make it all the way to his wedding day and he would have never seen a woman unclothed. Pornography existed in 1923, unbelievably rare and hard to access, though. Even around the house, I mean, amongst his sisters and cousins and people that were around, there was a great deal of modesty and care. So that, consider how awesome this must feel for a woman in 1923 to know that she is likely to be the only woman that her husband has ever seen unclothed. Can't imagine the empowerment that has to be for a woman. And that mystery that a man and a woman could experience together, we have been robbed of it. We're just shoving naked bodies in front of 11-year-old eyeballs. It's the abolition of man, what it means to be human. That human body is supposed to be so sacred. That human body is not separated from the soul in it, the essence in it. That body matters. And we just consume them like it's a product off the shelf. That's what pornography does. So that the body we actually interact with in life, the human bodies that are... they're humans. I hope my language doesn't sound like I'm separating soul from body. I'm trying to integrate that when you are looking at a human body, you are looking at a whole person. And then, for that matter, we've democratized that. We take that to OnlyFans now, where I can just see women in their 20s and 30s on these shows just talking about selling themselves as a legitimate, real option if you're in financial trouble. Just something that, why wouldn't you consider it? Because you're made in the image of God. That's why. Don't abolish yourself. Like, it's something to be human. Yeah, think of the other ways that we have diminished, abolished what it means to be human through sexuality. Yes, our widespread acceptance and celebration of homosexuality is an abolition of man. Part of what it means to be in the image of God is that, with obvious medical exceptions going on in the world, that we reproduce. That by our nature, our calling is to multiply. Homosexuality looks at something that is made for humanity. It is made for humanity. Multiply. And just says, no. I abolish one of the fundamental functions of humanity. I hope you hear me being very sensitive, recognizing, God, what we have done to men and women, pumping them with hormones the last 50 and 60 years, and all of our food, and what we've done to people in infertility is it's infuriating, really. What we do in abolishing humanity through this transgenderism craze is we say to our bodies, which are made in the image of God, that our feelings can supersede the body. That essentially saying your body, your physical being, it means nothing. What do you feel inside? What thoughts do you have? That's the real you. This thing, I think I've done content on this before, young people now calling their bodies their meat puppet. This meat puppet means nothing, which, by the way, is also then, this is now just occurring to me, totally irrational, in that we say, your body means nothing. All that really matters is what you feel on the inside. Okay, so if that's true, why are we mutilating bodies? If our body doesn't matter, all that matters is how I feel, why do I need my body to change? The illogic of transgenderism is just so obvious to see. So can you see, we're still abolishing man. We're doing it through sex. And then this one, I'm going back to Carl Truman. We're not just through sex, but we dehumanize. We abolish what it means to be human through death now. He was specifically talking about the proliferation. The proliferation of euthanasia options throughout mostly Canada, but some places in Europe as well. I mean, even my wife looked at me as she was scrolling on Instagram and saw that some country was promoting as this very sweet and good thing, these pods you can apparently go to where you lay in the pod if you want to kill yourself, and it just slowly takes enough out of the air in there that makes you fall asleep, and then after it's made you fall asleep, it takes more, a different chemical out of the air or a different element out of the air so that you just suffocate, but you don't know that you're suffocating. And she looked at me like almost cried about it. Like, this is a thing. People are now saying that this is a good, that you should have this option of just killing yourself. And then I really started thinking about that point about what we do with cemeteries and not having them around churches anymore. Of course, I mean, you see all the big churches getting built now. You wouldn't think for a second, they wouldn't think for 1 second that one of the features on that land would be to remind people both of the saints that are precious to them that have gone before them, or to remind them that they are mortal, that every Sunday when they walk in and when they walk out, they remember their own mortality. And that the way that we submit bodies to consecrated ground must mean this body that I'm in matters. So my feelings can't tell me to change my body. I'm going to take care of my health. That this physical body is not something I should sell on the internet. And everyone else's physical body is something so sacred that I should not buy it on the internet or buy images of it. That being made in the image of God, this body is so important that I want to use it for those things to which God has called humanity. Coming down to the end here, I did not mean to go 30 minutes on this. I'm almost sorry for it. I looked at all of that. We're going to entertain ourselves by men hitting each other, women selling their bodies, and children licking peanut butter off each other's toes. This is all a low anthropology of not seeing humans made in the image of God and therefore worthy of honor, every single one of them. And so what response could you give? Well, we love humans and their bodies and our own bodies. So yeah, take care of them. In conversations, use some of what I even just said about how Christians think about the body, and we want to submit them to consecrated ground. When we're talking about sex, we think what we do about sex, because the humans are made in the image of God and they're important. And this very important gift God gave, this unbelievably valuable, awesome gift God gave in human sexuality, man, we want to take very good care of it because it's such a good gift. We shouldn't be flippant with things that are so valuable. Okay. I have no idea how I'm going to transition. I do know in part how I'm going to transition, but I wanted to keep the show a little shorter. Here's where I'll go first. I mentioned there, as we're talking about the abolition of man, that one of the reasons that we know sex and death, those two things, are important in defining what it means to be human and using those things properly is because they're using those things properly is part of being in the image of God, as we just all went over. One of the reasons we know that is because there's so much content in the law of God around sexuality, birth, cleanness, uncleanness, death, and your let's call it relationship to cleanness or uncleanness in the temple when it comes to those things. And I have been for over a year now. I've been trying to think more and more about how good Old Testament wisdom in the law might affect modern day. And I know that some of that seems really far afield to you. You've not been gored by someone's ox and wondered how to get justice. But you might have had the modern day analog happen to you, and I think the modern day analog for that is getting hurt in a car accident or getting hurt at work. I want you to recognize that I get it. Car accidents, getting hurt at work, it's very serious. It's usually very costly. Not only is it costly, but you're losing wages, and while you're stressed out about that and trying to recover physically, you're also just trying to figure out how to get justice through that process. I know it could be intimidating and scary, but I don't want that for you. There are people who can help you, and the one I want to point you towards is a personal friend of mine. His name is Samuel Harms. Samuel Harms, that's H-A-R-M-S, as in stay out of harm's way. He's right here in Greenville. You can call him at 864-666-6666. Samuel Harms, attorney at law. For real, don't try to do this alone. Get someone who can help. Reach out to him. Samuel Harms here in Greenville at 33 Market Point Drive, Greenville, South Carolina, 29607. The number is 666-6666. So if you have been gored by the modern-day ox or hurt at work, really, is more likely, or hurt in a car accident, and you're looking for help with getting justice, give Samuel Harms a call. He's a good friend of mine. Samuel Harms, 666-6666. I had a bunch more on my prep sheet, but I went too long, so let me pick one. Let's do that one. All right, I will sit this by. Oh, what is, I can't find it. Now I found it. This is Zach, but it's not the Zach that sometimes writes in. That's Zach down in Columbia. Hi, man. You're probably listening. Hope so. This is a different Zach. This, apparently, is something that every school, every teacher in Los Angeles, in the middle schools and high schools, has to watch this. It is 50 seconds long. You'll need a little bit of narration before you start it. I want to play it for you and then respond to it. A woman who kind of gives off man vibes, I couldn't quite tell, but they were trying to make that point. So it is a man who looks, who is passably coming across as a woman. That's the first person that's going to be talking here, and they're going to exit pretty quickly. And then just two women are talking to one man. So that's your setup. Four characters, one's going to talk early and then leave. That's the man who is pretending to be a woman. And then there's two women having a conversation with a man in the workplace. This is a teacher orientation for teachers in Los Angeles. Let's listen together.
Better get this contract finished and sent off like I promised. Congrats again.
Well, I messed that up. So the woman who is the, well, the man who pretended to be a woman, she's now leaving the screen. He is now leaving the screen. He said, I got this deal done, and now I got to go off and get it finalized. And that person's now leaving, and now two women will talk to a man about this person who just left.
It would be great to see how she works close up. If I could learn to close accounts at the rate she does, I mean, what an opportunity.
Yeah, well, he really is good at landing the big fish.
Mark.
What?
That's so rude. Abby should be referred to as she.
So you're getting it? So they are all saying she, but this dude said he about a person who is passively coming across as a woman again, but is definitely a dude.
What's the big deal?
Using the wrong pronoun is offensive. I'm just glad she didn't hear what you just said.
Simple biology.
No, it's rude and it's offensive not to use the right pronoun.
I'll never understand. God made him a man, he's a man.
Abby has the right to be who she wants to be. And the right to be called what she wants to.
And I have the right to believe what I believe. He is a he.
I'm not asking you to change your beliefs. Just keep them to yourself at the workplace.
Oh, man, there's so much here. Yeah, this will take us through the rest of the show. I can't imagine us doing anything else. I shall back it up a little bit. I want to break this down like line by line. Here's this training video again.
What an opportunity.
Yeah, well, he really is good at landing the big fish.
Mark.
What?
That's so rude. Abby should be referred to as she.
What's the big deal?
Using the wrong pronoun is offensive.
I once had someone tell me that they were offended at something I did at work. I was 23, and I probably didn't respond properly, but I did calmly say, so I don't want to be rude, but so like you don't have a right not to be offended in the world. Like, that's going to happen. You'll be offended at things.
I'm just glad she didn't hear what you just said.
Simple biology.
No,
yeah, it is. It is simple biology. That's a guy. And so in our language, English, guys are referred to as he's and hims.
It's rude and it's offensive not to use the right pronoun.
I'll never understand.
I won't understand either, in part because of this. Who was it rude to? That man is not even there. It's why third-person pronouns are particularly a problem, because you are demanding of people how to refer to you in your absence. In my absence, yeah, sure, I want you to say awesome things about me. But if you don't, it's not my right to have you refer to me the way I want to be referred to. That's in third-person pronoun, which means that person's not there. Who got hurt here? Talk about a victimless issue.
God made him a man. He's a man.
Abby has the right to be who she wants to be. And the right.
That goes to what I was just talking about with the abolition of man, the C.S. Lewis thing. The person they're calling Abby has feelings and thoughts. And that person's body, that man's body, can be told, no, your body doesn't matter. My feelings and my thoughts, they're different than my body. My feelings and my thoughts supersede my body. And I hope we can start to see how incredibly insane that is.
To be called what she wants to.
And I have the right to believe what I believe. He is a he.
I'm not asking you to change your beliefs. Just keep them to yourself at the workplace.
That's the key line right there. I guess I can believe it. I guess I can believe they don't catch their own irony. But you keep it to yourself at work. Well, hold on a second. Why doesn't Abby have to keep it to himself at work? I am expressing the position of humanity, not a joke here, for 6,000 plus years of recorded history. The idea that a man can be a woman is a religious belief. That religion is called secular humanism. So why does she? Now I'm messed up. Why does he get to bring his religion in here and make me follow his religion? I think that needs to be the argument and maybe the lawsuit. If ever For the Christian gets in trouble for this, I think that's the lawsuit that needs to get filed. Someone brought their religion to work. And honestly, it wasn't me. I'm behaving like these two women in this video. None of you thought this even 5 years ago. You all made this up a little bit ago because you want to feel good about yourselves. And I'm just practicing normal humanity for, again, 6,000 years. And some weirdo cultist brought in their cult and made us all follow their cult language about their pronouns. And I think their religion should be kept out of the workplace. I'm being a lot of bit facetious about this. Do you see how inconsistent even that is? It makes no sense. But consider, that's happening in an American workplace. Part of your training is about pronouns, and the key line at the end is, you can believe whatever you want, but don't bring it in here. All right, well, let's equal opportunity over here. If you can't bring your religion in here either. I think that would be helpful. Let's do at least two more of these. I had a lot I wanted to do. I don't recommend going to watch the whole thing. I don't think it's fruitful. But there is a fairly large tweeter and TikToker. Her real name is Chaya. I think it's Kaya. Kaya Reichick. She's a Jewish lady who runs an account called, this is called Libs of TikTok. Apparently what she mostly does is find people who say insane things, and she just posts them and without commentary and lets the insane thing speak for itself. That's what I mostly see from her content, although I don't see a lot. I don't have a ton of experience with this person. But she did an interview recently with Taylor Lorenz, who I'm much more familiar with. Taylor Lorenz has been part of mainstream media for a long time, and I'm mostly annoyed by her. Don't think she's all that interesting of a thinker. And apparently these two women, I would put them in their late 30s, early 40s, apparently despise each other and fight about things on the internet, and they got together for a chat. In that chat, which again was like an hour long, I listened to it. I didn't watch it. I listened to it. Several fascinating things, but one I wanted to bring up that I think is just me trying to equip you for conversations if they happen to come up in your life with a person like Taylor Lorenz. Taylor Lorenz is mad at Kaya Rychick because Kaya Rychick argues and has been very successful that several books that are in public schools that are sexually explicit shouldn't be there. Like books like Gender Queer should not be in these public school libraries. So, not banning a book, but saying in a school library where 11-year-olds are and 16-year-olds are, this book that has a cartoon, it's my own podcast, I can say what I want to say, so I'm just going to say it. This that has a cartoon blowjob in it, it shouldn't be there because 9-year-olds should not have cartoons of this available to them. And you know what? Also, 16-year-olds shouldn't have cartoons of this available to them, and so it shouldn't be in school libraries. That's Kaya's argument, and she has been doing apparently a great job around the country winning these arguments. And Taylor Lorenz is mad at her because apparently Taylor Lorenz wants 9-year-olds to see cartoons like that. Except it becomes clear during the conversation that Kaya is bringing up these photos, bringing up these pictures, and Taylor Lorenz has never seen them. She's never seen these very explicit photos that are also cartoons of other types of sex that you probably don't want your kids knowing about, period. And it's hard to get the expression on Taylor Lorenz's face, but I think she's surprised. She has gone through this, by the way. She's reported on this Kaya Rychick. She's been arguing that nothing should be removed out of libraries, and she obviously is not familiar with the material. She does not know that these images are in these books. But here was the actually interesting part. Taylor Lorenz's argument ends up being, but Kaya, you're not a sexual educator. How can you have a position on this? I mean, Kaya then asks, well, do you think pictures of like this should be available to a 10-year-old? Well, I'm not a sexual educator either. And if you're not a sexual educator, and I'm not a sexual educator, how can we know? How can we know whether or not? We have so limited ourselves. Not, I mean, I haven't. But there's something in the culture that has so limited itself to deferring to, quote, experts, end quote, that we can't even just say obvious things anymore. I don't need one credit hour as an educator to know 9-year-olds don't need to see cartoon oral sex. I don't need it. I don't need a bachelor's degree. You know what I don't need? I don't need a middle school education to know that my nieces don't need a picture like that available to them. I just know, just deep in my soul. And if you would argue that, you're a degenerate. You don't need a sex educator expert to tell you something that is obvious if you have not deadened the good thing called a conscience that the Lord has given all of us, including the most pagan and godless among us. They just know. Like, wake me up, and for that matter, wake up a pagan. Wake up the average godless pagan in this country in the middle of the night, 3 a.m, and just get their quick gut instinct. They can't think about it. Just show them a picture of, by the way, these cartoons, they're of children doing these sexual things to each other. One of them is more of a, it's like a teenage boy, a little bit older boy, older man in one of these stories. And just ask, instinct, dead of night, should 9-year-olds have this picture? And hold up the picture. Even the most godless among us will mostly say, no, that's crazy. What pervert wants a 10-year-old to have access to this picture? It's not hard. You don't even need an expert on that. I'm not denigrating expertise. I think it's actually really important. I love having expertise, especially theologically, people to learn from. The folks that learn a lot, they are valuable. There are just some things, though, we don't need an expert. The things I'm leaving out that I was going to do are probably helpful for me, that we just don't need to talk about them. They're more political in nature, and I don't want to. Maybe we'll bring them back next week. But I only reminded you at the beginning of the show, so let me do it one more time, and we'll sign off here. Oh, I have one more announcement for you. So Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or Threads, find me, Corey Truax. You can email the show at CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com, CoreyTruaxShow@gmail.com. And then finally, I have had some trouble getting it uploaded onto my feed, so let me just point you over to the Westminster Doxology podcast, where I was on last week with Pastor Bradley Cox and Cody Fields. Great conversation. I found it fruitful and helpful. You can also find it on YouTube, where Cody, he is just always several steps ahead of me on these production things, you know, several camera shoot, well-edited. You can find it over on YouTube as well. Just look for Westminster Doxology Podcast. I am grateful that you listen, and if the Lord allows, I'll be back with another new edition of the Corey Truax Show next week. Until then, everybody, peace and love.